Hello and welcome to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, the brand new health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WellFest together with presenting partners KBC. KBC are supporting communities across Ireland, bringing you tips on health and well-being as part of their sustainability actions. Partnering with leaders in health and fitness such as WellFest and the KBC Dublin Marathon, they are playing a part in creating positive experiences that can be enjoyed by all. You can log on to kbc.ie to find out more, because KBC wants you feeling well good for WellFest 2020. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. Delighted to say that we've got Stephen Scullion, who is a professional runner from Belfast. He recently took the national title in the 2019 KBC Dublin Marathon and now has his sights set on the Olympics in Tokyo. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks very much for having me on. Very excited to talk to you guys.
I'm really excited to chat to you as well, because running is something that I don't do, and I'm excited to learn a lot. Come here, for people who don't know who Stephen Scullion is, tell us where you got started. Tell us how you got into it.
How many don't know me now? So you should be covered.
We're talking to a celebrity.
No, but look, I started. I think back in probably like, I don't know, it's probably nearly like the year 2000 or something now, or like 98, 99 back in school. And I guess I won silly races when I was a kid, but nothing really major until like 2006, I think it was.
The one to the canteen, was it?
I pretty much, like our sports day, and I used to get all nervous for it, but I took a turn, I suppose, in 2006. I won the Irish Junior National Cross Country title, and that allowed me to go to World Cross Country in Japan. And pretty much since that, you know, 14 years of quite a lot of Irish vests and caps. And like you rightly said, you know, this year could well be the Olympics. So that would, you know, be the pinnacle and the best cap you can have basically in running.
It's crazy. Yeah. And I understand that you went for Olympic qualification for Rio in 2016. Can you tell us what that was like, and tell us a bit about what happened?
I think there was just a major lack of experience. I still had the same like talent and work ethic and ability that I have now, but I just made a lot of mistakes, a lot of errors. And people can think running's really simple, but you know, it is when you figure out how to do it well, but learning can be really costly. And so I you know, it's really harsh. It's a harsh, harsh world, but I basically worked too hard and ran too fast. And and then in training, I got hurt. And then once you obviously get hurt, which is your responsibility to look after, by the way, and I didn't look after it. So, you know, I got hurt. And then that was 12 days before I was due to run the London Marathon to try to qualify. And, and you know, I'm 90% sure that, you know, if I didn't have that quad tear or whatever, you know, I would have done it based on my fitness. And so it was devastating. And obviously now I've raced so well over the marathon, improved myself so many times, you know, that 90 almost becomes 99.
I get you. Yeah.
So yeah, it was devastating, and, you know, devastating beyond belief. Gosh, I took 8 months out of the sport, and I look back now and think I was almost just depressed at the outcome for 8 months. And so went on my own little downward spiral of doing whatever I needed to do to cope. But yeah, it was tough.
And well, then let's talk a bit about the comeback. So doing the London Marathon and finishing in 2 hours and 17 minutes. And the reason why I want to say after just 13 weeks of training is that a lot of people could say, oh, 13 weeks of training, that's a lot. But I mean, if anyone has done any competitive sport, they'd know that that's not a lot, which is like, if you look at that finish time, it's a serious achievement given the fact that you're only training for 13 weeks.
And I mean, I guess on that note, I'll anyone listening that wants to try in the next 13 weeks to run 2:17, I'd probably pay them quite a lot of money if they do, just for the fun of it. No, it is tough, but it was 13 weeks on top of obviously years and years of consistency behind me before my like 8 months off. But you know, it was 13 weeks where I had to lose about, I think I was up at 83 kilograms. Wow. So I lost about, I think I lost eventually like 10 of them. So I still didn't quite get back to what I race at now, which would be like 68 kilograms. 60. But I certainly.
Can I ask you how tall you are? You look like you're about, you're nearly 6 foot, are you? Am I right?
I mean, well, I'd be 6 foot on Tinder, but I think I'm 5'11".
if a girl you fancy asks you your height, you're 6 foot for sure. Yeah.
Just about 6 foot. No, I'm 5'11". So it was a tough challenge. I remember starting back, and I started back for all the right reasons. And so I made this goal that I believed the day I started back, I could run about 2:45, I think is what I said. Because I went for a run and I did 13 mile and I pretty much ran around the 2:45 marathon. And I thought, I'm pretty sure I could do that twice.
So after 8 months, when you got back into running,
eight months off, that's insane.
Like
day one, I just went and cracked on with 13 mile and I think I averaged about 6:20. So I think that's roughly around.
It's good to use you as an example, though. A lot of people get into competitive sports when they're like in their late teens, early 20s. And then for work purposes, like I'm an example of that, they have to kind of give up the sport. But then some people get into a stage where they'd love to go back. And it's great hearing someone take that much time off and hold on to some sort of like athletic memory, for want of a better term.
I did it twice. You know, I between 20... all of 2014 and half of 2015, I took 18 months off.
That was before
the attempt to make Rio. You know, I took a lengthy period off. And so, like, there's no doubt it can be done. But, like, for example, week one back in training, or maybe it was week two or three, and I guess being back a couple of weeks, you start to have expectations and things like this. And I remember going on a training run and I wanted to run a marathon effort, I guess we could call it. And obviously I wanted to run the World Championships qualifying time, which was 2:18. I needed to run like 5:18, I think it was, per mile or something like that.
Wow,
okay. And I couldn't run 5:50 in the park. And I was like, I remember distinctly, I was about to cry about the moment and have a wee breakdown. And then I basically told myself to F and wise up. It was me who had got myself into that mess. So don't even think about having a wee tantrum. You know, like you can't take 8 months off and think it's just going to happen in week two or three.
Yeah.
So every week was a struggle for various reasons. And the first couple of weeks were easy because there was no expectations, and then expectations grow, my own expectations. And yeah, like I am very lucky. I have this resilient and durable body. And so I could pretty much run 80 to 90 mile from week one, and I didn't get hurt, and I was able to just get to London and stand on that start line again. And it was one of the funnest, still to this day, it's one of the funnest marathons I've ever done, just because it was so unique and free from expectation, and nobody expected me to do well. And it was a lot of fun. I enjoyed every part of it, the bands on the course, the crowd, and now like things like bands and crowds can really start to kind of annoy me. But like back then it didn't, because like now if I don't run like a 5 minute mile, I'm like annoyed at some woman yelling in my ear.
I feel you. I'm the same when I don't run a 5 minute mile. I get very angry at myself. I do. Yes.
It's tough, really tough.
Yeah. You're very humble, I have to say. Come here. You're talking there about having like, you know, a resilient body, but when it comes to running, and you touched on it earlier on a little bit about how it's not easy. And to me, the element of running that's not easy is that you're on your own. You're out there and you just have to have not only a resilient body, but you need a resilient mentality as well. So you started running at such an early age. I mean, at that age, a lot of people want to do other things other than run around. Like, how does someone like you get into that mentality where it's like, right, okay, I'm on my own for this amount of time. Because it's not like you can bring like an iPod with you back in the day either. Like you would have had to do it without music. It's literally just you. How does somebody train not only their body but their mentality to keep going?
I think that develops over the years. Like, you know, I was still a kid that didn't want to run either, just like everybody else. Like, you know, there's this, it's not necessarily totally linked, but there's this idea that, you know, people talk about follow your passion, and there's really good books on this. Like, it's one's called Passion Paradox, for example, and they talk about that passion basically grows, and passion grows as ability grows. So look, when I first started running and wasn't amazing from the get-go, you know, it's tough to focus, it's tough to be non-distracted, and I might have raced and not really felt like racing that day, and wish I was out with my friends doing different things. And but what I did learn about running, and I think everyone would agree that does run and still runs, is if you outlast the competition, kind of two things happen. You don't quit, so you have a far better chance of being successful. And also then, as the years go by, I think you just, like everything, it's a skill. You learn the skill of being able to focus. You learn the skill of not allowing negativity to creep in. Or if it does creep in, you learn ways to cope with it. And And I talk now that it's basically automatic. And I actually, believe it or not, like kind of get pissed off at my subconscious, because I kind of like get into a race and I'm enjoying myself. And then I see somebody like maybe half a mile up front and I go, oh, for goodness sake, my subconscious is going to want to catch that person.
That's a good thing though, isn't it?
And I was thinking, I was quite happy back here. Like, and right enough, you know, I've got this really nice autopilot now, but it's all to do with the preparation. It's all to do with the hard work and the sacrifices and things like this. Like it gets you to the point where you are able to cope mm-hmm. better. And like I say, like it doesn't happen overnight. I was never this, you know, a lady quoted on she messaged me on Instagram not long ago, and she basically said she had used me for a PowerPoint called like Unbreakable Mind. Wow. And I was telling my mom about it, and my mom was laughing her head off
because like, she didn't believe her.
She knows. Well, she knows everything, you know. She knows, like, she knows that I wasn't always this maybe unbreakable uh-huh. mind or whatever you want to call it, and certainly wasn't. You know, I used to quit all the time and quit school and quit jobs and I guess running just became that one thing in my life that I didn't quit, and so it became the thing that I really wanted to apply myself to the full of my capacity, just to see how good I could be.
So, before we touch on the, you know, qualifying for Tokyo, and then we might touch on Doha a little bit as well, just for people who are looking to get back into running, we kind of touched on that already, but there are people out there, you know, who mm-hmm. would love to start it. And like we've said a couple of times now, it's not easy to just go out and run, you know, but say for someone who's like sitting at home listening to this podcast and they know who you are, it's something that they've always wanted to do for recreational purposes. I mean, how does someone start? What's the best advice you can give to somebody for starting an activity like running?
I think there's a couple of things I would say. I think, you know, priority number one should always be to stay healthy and not to get hurt. And so there needs to be a responsibility there that you know how much your body can handle. And sometimes you have to walk before you can jog or run. And then sometimes you might have to walk a bit and then introduce a bit of running. And, you know, there's plenty of, like, if you were to Google today, there's plenty of couch to 5K type programs if you mm-hmm. have taken a long time off. And don't see that as being
couch to 5K.
Pretty much. But, like, don't see it as, like, oh, I'm better than that, or I'm ahead of that. Yeah. Or you might be, and that's awesome. But, like, you know, better not to find out that you're not the hard way by getting a bit of an injury, which basically throws your psychology off straight away. Uh-huh. But you will be hit with setbacks. So that's the next thing I'm going to touch on is, you know, at the first hurdle, don't just abandon ship and think it's not for you. Injuries will come. And if you do get a little bit of an injury, you might have to figure out how to strengthen that area of your body, or, you know, how to work with a physio to prevent it in future. And again, Google, YouTube, you know, you don't have to go see a physio. It's great if you have the time. It's mm-hmm. great if you can afford it. But, you know, that's where YouTube and Google's, you know, you're probably going to find somebody else in a message forum somewhere is going to say, took up running 2 weeks ago and I've got sore shins, and you might have the exact same problem.
And there's a solution.
And so I think there's solutions. Yeah. You know, I don't think these hurdles in anything in life, there's a hurdle. So, you know, you have to just work through them and figure out ways rather than I can't or I don't want to, you know, figure out ways to overcome what's holding you back from, you know, potentially running a little bit more. And then as you get more running behind you, then you might actually start to enjoy it way more, which is another thing to consider.
Yeah, I love all that. Thanks so much for that. Because like, even someone like myself, who I'd be active and I love training, running is something that like I would have done years ago, mm-hmm. but I just have not got back into it again. It's my mind more than anything. Like, it's not my body, mm-hmm. it's my mind. So that's great
Absolutely.
To hear. Something I'm really excited to talk about now, because I'm one of these people that are constantly looking up sports in the mm-hmm. Olympics that I could potentially qualify for despite aging. Well, running isn't one of them. I have my eye on table tennis, all right.
There you go.
But come here, talk to me about the process of qualifying for the Olympics in Tokyo. What does it entail? What do you have to do when it comes to the different races and race times? For someone who has no idea how it works, can you tell us a bit about it?
Yeah, look, there was... I started my own podcast over... I guess maybe like 16 months ago now, or it was December 2018. That's all I know off the top of my head. But the reason I'm going to say that is because at the time of starting that, the qualification, how to qualify, wasn't even released yet. And so I was telling people, and I made an assumption, like on this podcast back then that if you run, it used to be if you run a qualifying standard, you know, you'd be eligible to make a team basically. And back then, a time like 2:14, for example, has probably 2:14 for a marathon has probably made every Olympics for Ireland, every Olympics that ever has existed, I would imagine. Maybe 2:13, but certainly 2:13, 2:14, that sort of time has made every Olympics that we've had to date. And so I a month later ran 2:14 and thought, happy days, you know, here we go. Can't wait to go to Tokyo.
Yeah,
and,
literally.
And then, you know, I think about a month later, you know, the World Athletics, as it's now called, they decided to release qualification criteria. Mm-hmm. And I believe they're making it similar to the likes of triathlon, if anybody understands triathlon, whereby there's qualification points.
Yeah.
You gain points at certain races, i.e. national champs. Your points are worked out based on your time, mm-hmm. finishing time, and the value of the race that you've just performed well at. So if it's a high-profile race, you're going to get some sort of ranking points for that. Okay. If it's not, you won't. And then they also released qualification time, which was now 2:11:30, which, you know, everyone thought, wow, guys, like, really? Like, you know, uh-huh. for Ireland in 2016, the guys that made the Olympics ran 2:15:15, uh-huh. between 2:14:50 and 2:15:20. So, you know, you were looking at it almost being 4 minutes faster this time. And, like, you know, to quote the difference, I think three people in Ireland have only ever ran quicker than, like 2:12 or 2:11:30. So it became... It just, I mean, 2:11:30 is very close to most countries except for Kenya, Ethiopia, and Morocco. Like, it's most European countries, their national record wouldn't be, you know, too far under sort of 2:11 and 2:10. Uh-huh. So it became like a far greater ask. And irrelevant to that, this whole points thing and stuff, mm-hmm. became a really complicated process. Nobody knew nothing. And so it almost like tainted it all a little bit, because it was like, wow, like, you know, this is crazy. And then not only that, like, the points thing was supposed to happen in Doha, and then they decided, no, we're not going to bother with points, we're just going to take the qualifying times. And so everyone was predicting that the same might happen for the Olympics. And, you know, it's just it sort of, given how high profile the event is, you'd have thought this would have been decided 3 or 4 years before, not like literally a year before. And then it just became quite clear that the, you know, the Olympic Committee and World Athletics just decide whatever they want.
Yeah.
You know, they're calling the shots. It was like, and I know this for, like, you know, I would not be surprised if, you know, I woke up to a news article tomorrow and a tweet where they changed the criteria again, you know, and they do, they, I'm pretty sure at the bottom of every policy, they put a little star that says,
this could change tomorrow.
If we believe that something needs changed, we could change it. Then that's, you're just mad. Like, all right, awesome. But look, you're given a criteria, you're told what you need to do. And, you know, it's up to the athlete then. And the other two ways to qualify was top 10 at a world marathon major, which is the Boston Marathon, uh-huh. the London Marathon, New York, Chicago, Berlin, and Tokyo. And then top 5 at what is called a gold label marathon, which is, you know, the marathon slightly not as, I guess, prestige as those 6 I've just named, but okay. You're looking at Rotterdam, Frankfurt, Dubai, Houston, the one I did was one of them, and mm-hmm. Valencia. But, you know, that's still a lottery, because if you were to go today and look up the results of the 15 to 20 gold label marathons that there are, coming top 5 could range from having to run 2:06 for a marathon to, you know, 2:11. So you could, you know, a year ago, we were all talking about strategically going to some marathon in China.
I was just going to ask, yeah. So I was literally, from listening to the system you're telling me, I was going to go, well, would you not find a race that's like in the middle of, I don't want to say nowhere, but like off the radar a little bit.
You can certainly try. But like, you know, some of the stories were, there's this marathon at 7,500 feet altitude that happens to be gold labeled. But, you know, from year to year, in order to achieve gold label status, they need to invite something like, you know, Houston had 10 guys that could break 209. Uh-huh. So, you know, you're still, in order for it to be gold label, it has to be a really top quality race. But it's a lottery, you know, you might find that you pick one where it works out really good for you. And you know, like me, like, even though I ran 211, it amazed me to see that I actually could have came top five running like 212.50, I think it was. But of course, I crossed the line and didn't believe in a million years that I'd have been top five, because there was like, I think there was 12 people on the start line, sub 210, or sub 211. So I only passed two people the whole race. And so I was thinking, where's the other, you know, seven? And they might have dropped out. They might have, like, these things happen. Yeah, you know, it's really windy, and so some people struggled. And it's a very tough process. It's you know,
give yourself some credit. You worked hard and you deserved it. We're not going to talk. We're not going to talk about people dropping out on the wind affecting people.
No.
You're an athlete, Stephen. Come on. Like,
if we talk about, like, you know, and again, that's what makes it so difficult. I've ran maybe three or four marathons in the last 2 years where I've had to deal with Arctic freeze, you know, lowest temperatures ever. At London Marathon, I had to deal with hottest ever temperatures at London Marathon. It was 24 Celsius.
I love this because, like, I'm comparing this to me getting out of my car when I'm parked in the gym when it's winter in Ireland and getting from my car to the gym.
And that's the struggle. Like, you know, and I'll tell you, like, you know, 2:11:30. As achievable as it can sound or not achievable, there's no at the finish line. You know, was it windy today? Well, knock a few seconds off for that. Did you run most of it by yourself? You sound like you had a wee bit of a cold 2 weeks ago. Could we knock a wee bit off for that? You know, that doesn't exist.
No.
It's just you. If it's windy, you deal with it. If you don't run through 11:30, you don't make it that day.
That's literally it. Yeah, gone.
It's harsh. So no, it's the marathon in general, irrelevant to the Olympics or anything like that. It's all you can do is prepare as well as you think you possibly can and show up. And if you're graced with good weather and good competition, amazing. If you're not, suck it up and deal with it and get the best result.
No, but
get the best result that day that you can.
You're so blunt, but you're so right though. That's the way you have to
absolutely
do it. Come here, let's touch on Doha a bit. First of all, we'll get to the we're going to get to that amazing grand pic that you took of you with the with Doha behind you. Lovely picture.
Oh yeah.
you know
Paul
how to post.
Paul Carragher took.
Oh really? You know how to post a good Instagram
photo credit
pic?
Yeah. Paul Carragher.
But I do understand that it didn't go quite according to plan. So, you know, tell us a bit about that, because I think that's, you know, especially when it comes to, like, online these days, you know, you don't see the setbacks as much as you see the successes. So tell us a bit about that and how you bounce back.
There's a couple of things I think went on. Like, I think first of all, Doha was just an incredibly hard place to race. It was always going to be an incredibly hard marathon to prepare for. And I sort of thought training in a place called Louisiana in America there, where it is really hot and humid, like, you know, would have, like, prepared me. But, you know, every time I had conversations about it, I said this strategy that I've put in place to prepare for Doha can help prepare me as best as I possibly can for the heat and humidity. But that doesn't mean that someone else won't just handle the heat and humidity better than me anyway.
Okay,
you know,
there
was always that lottery. There was a lottery that, like, if I thought my training in Louisiana was going well, but then if you had to send the best 100 guys in the world to Louisiana, I might have realized, oh my goodness, they all handle this way better than I do. Uh-huh. That's annoying. But look, I thought I'd done everything I can. And then 10 days before probably 2 weeks before, I started having this, like, toothache, and I, you know, I didn't think a huge amount of it. And then I went and got it checked out, and, you know, I was going to have this tooth pulled. And as part of the tooth being pulled, you know, that wasn't the issue. Tooth pulled, no problem whatsoever. Tooth pulled, have to take antibiotics for 10 days or risk it getting infected or getting dry socket, I think they call it. I didn't know how much that was going to impact me. And then I got the tooth pulled, and then I went on these antibiotics, and then I flew to Doha the next day. So I'm doing runs in Doha thinking, you know, why is my heart rate 180 when I'm jogging along here? Is it the heat? Is it the humidity? Is it
my tooth?
Is it the antibiotics? Wow, there was just so many unknowns. And so it was a really long week of like just trying to mentally keep myself under control. Mm-hmm. And I remember at one point just thinking like, hey, like here you are 2 days before the World Champs. There's people out there in Ireland right now are going to do two runs today in gym. So that maybe in 10 years time or 5 years time, they can make a world championship. Uh-huh. Here you are at a world championships mm-hmm. and you're going to be stressed about it. Like just relax, you know, like I remember thinking that. And then obviously I did. And I took it all really in my own, like my own way. I handle it all really well. Like it's the first time I've ever had to have a bloody ice bath 10 minutes before I'm on the start line of a marathon.
So wow.
You're literally chattering your teeth while trying to put your racing flats on uh-huh. in an attempt to make you colder. A lot of new things going on, like but I remember just, you know, I dealt with the race as well as I could. I ran, you know, with the same, a much higher heart rate than I would ever really run for a full marathon. The speed I started is the speed I finished. Mm-hmm. But I remember just crossing the line and just thinking like just being really sad about it. Like, you know, and I didn't even know that I was going to be sad when I crossed the line. Like, you know, I hadn't really thought about that in the race, but I just crossed this line and put a towel over my head and, mm-hmm. you know, like just cry because I was just so sad about it. I just couldn't believe like how hard I had kind of, I thought I had worked. And then it wasn't excuses. It wasn't a tooth. It wasn't, I remember just thinking like, you know, almost like grow up. So what, there's 42 people better than you.
Yeah,
like, you know, like train harder and go beat them next time. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, don't get a you know, you can complain about the tooth, but it was my responsibility 4 months before to make sure that my teeth were in a good place. You know, everything nowadays, there has to be accountability and ownership. Yeah.
But I get as well how it's a learning process. I mean, like,
absolutely. You would never
have been looking at your teeth 4 months beforehand thinking, well, I'm going to run a marathon in 4 months. I need to go check my teeth out. Like,
yeah. And people can tell you and people can have a go at you, but honestly, like until it happens and you go through it, it's a tough learning curve. But you know, already, what do you think I'm doing next week? You know, getting dental checkups. Like, it's you gotta do what you gotta do. You gotta learn and you know, and we see the best sports people in the world getting beat, but you very rarely see them get beat twice. You know,
yeah.
And so that's the way I looked at it. Like, you know, a part of it could have been the heat and not handling the heat maybe as well as others. Maybe my heat acclimation strategy in Louisiana didn't work as well as we thought it might. Could be all different sorts of reasons, but very, very, very sad day, though. I still don't like losing. Mm-hmm. And the worst part for me was that I just didn't feel, in most of the marathons I've been doing, I've been finishing really well and you know, beating people I never really thought I could beat. And like, you know, coming up to these Kenyans and Ethiopians and roaring past them and thinking everything's awesome. And
yeah,
Doha was just different. I just basically jogged around and I just felt more like a participant than a competitor. And that was really hard for me. But equally, you know, with most of my defeats, I pick myself up and work harder. The two I've ran since, you know, just better and better. And like, I plan to go to Boston in 3 months time and it'll be the best so far. And it's just, you know, just learning, constantly learning and adapting things and then making sure you don't make, hopefully, the same mistakes twice.
Let's talk about the KBC Dublin Marathon and being the first Irish person across the line. I mean,
yeah,
that's a surreal moment in itself, surely, isn't it?
Yeah, so obviously bouncing back from Doha, like we talked about, that wasn't the best day for me. I joked almost on, you know, people follow my training online on a website called Strava, and I had hinted about doing Dublin on the podcast, but a lot depended on how I would recover from Doha. I had taken a week off after Doha, and I went to a place called Myrtle Beach in North Carolina with my coach, and whether I was going to do Dublin or not, it was important to have that week. And mm-hmm. like, we still joke to this day that maybe every time before every marathon, 3 weeks before, I should go and eat fried shrimp and play like tennis on a beach. I did like no running, and you know, I had all this fried food all week, like literally didn't deprive myself of anything. And then towards the end of the week, I went for a run, and like I think it was like Friday, and I didn't do anything too fast or anything, but I remember just telling my coach that, you know, I think I could do Dublin, no problem. And I went back to Flagstaff that day, that Friday, and this is where it gets even better. I actually go to like a bar and read a book, and I have like a few beers, and it's a delicious beer in Flagstaff. And then I obviously got like my emotional head on, and my emotional head was texting my coach saying, I'm not doing Dublin. Like, it's a terrible idea. Actually, I think I'm just going to retire. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got really sad, and I texted them, and I texted them all the right things. You know, I said like, look, like, you're going to think I'm really spoiled for like saying that I'm thinking about retirement and things like this. And at the end of the day, I was like, look, like I don't want to be a runner just for the sake of being a runner. I don't do it just because I want free Under Armour clothes or a little bit of money or et cetera, et cetera. I do it because I want to be like one of the best there is.
Of course, yeah.
And I just got my ass handed to me. Like I didn't understand it. I didn't. So I was just having this like tell me, you know, I can come higher than blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I was having this like little breakdown moment. And he said, look, just sleep on it. And I think I had about another 4 pints. Like I ended up getting a cab home pretty drunk. And I woke up the next morning and I said, I'd had a sore throat the whole week too, which I had thought was maybe the salt water and stuff. But actually, I just think I had a sore throat. And
yeah.
And so I went the next morning and I thought I would do a little bit of a training session. And I did the training session and I texted my coach after it and said, this is hungover, like I'm hungover. Anyway, I wake up this next morning and I drive down and I text him after and I say, like, and I'm not kidding. I text him and I say, look, I'm not running Dublin. I think I could win Dublin. And that was it. From that day, I just, you know, I just knew, like, I think when I put my training online,
uh-huh,
I said 2 weeks to Dublin. I don't know what happened at Doha was the exact line that I used. And,
uh-huh,
you know, I decided to book a flight that day back to Dublin and, you know, spoke to the organizers and said, make sure I'm entered. And, you know, I have a support team at home. And so I had to go through different checks. The physio had to look me over.
Mm-hmm.
The S&C coach had to say, yes, you're as strong as you usually are. You haven't lost strength in Doha. And once I went through those, and then I, you know, sat down with a sports psychologist and he's asking me, you know, why, what's the reason, is it going to help Tokyo? And we go through all these little checks and it just became very clear that it was something I felt strongly enough about that I could go and run really well at. So, you know, then race day comes. And again, it was a bit like the very first London I'd ever done. You know, it came 3 weeks after a world champ, so there was no pressure. And people might have thought I was going to run excellently well and things like this, but, you know, nobody knew quite to be sure. And nobody knew, was Doha bad because I wasn't fit, or was Doha bad because it was just Doha?
So
to execute the race the way I did and to finish as fast as I did, it was just in Dublin, you know, it's arguably, I think it still might be my best marathon, like performance wise, although it's not fastest. It was just a perfectly executed, far less stress than I carried into Houston. Houston became very stressful.
Mm-hmm.
But just such a fun day. And yeah, and Double Marathon Mission have played such a big role in my development. To be able to, you know, Jim hugged me at the end, and it's the kind of hug that people will just not understand the depth of, that sort of hug, because someone like Jim, even when I was a boy and I hadn't even ran a marathon, mm-hmm, this is a guy who might help me out with flights, do a warm weather training kit, mm-hmm, trip, or via the Dublin Marathon Mission, it's called. And, you know, even my very first altitude camp before that London marathon, for example, you know, I was, like I said, I was playing rugby and 13 kilograms overweight. But when I messaged him and told him that my MacBook had broken Flagstaff and my only way to make income is building websites, he bought me a new MacBook.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
These are the kind of things that, you know, you just never forget. So, mm-hmm, and I've also given Jim a really hard time. You know, I can be hard work, but like, I'm demanding and I
push. He's like, God's sake, Stephen, I got you a MacBook.
Yeah, but like, I push people because I know how much I'm pushing and I know where this could go.
Of course, yeah.
So I push people as much as I'd be willing to push myself. And I hope, you know, when results do pay off like that, they kind of go, yeah, maybe it was worth it, you know, like, but that's just how I am. And so I think that hug was,
was Jim probably like thinking like fair play to him. Like it's been phenomenal. But yeah, like I say, I definitely pushed people and I pushed people for the right reasons, because like I live in a world and a sporting world in America where I just see the kind of support and I see what is leading to these big results. Uh-huh. And so I try to get it for myself. But sometimes you're having to deal with inner politics and things like this.
Of course,
and I just
absolutely.
Try to push past that. Mm-hmm. And like I say, they responded so well. So for me to be able to go to, you know, KBC Dublin Marathon 2019 there and perform like I did was massive. And it might go down as, you'd have no idea what is your best ever race. You know, you never know. That could be it. I hope it's not. I hope there's better ones to come. But you know, that's the kind of race I could really retire quite happy and just be like, wow, I did that.
You touched briefly on your plan to go to Boston, and that's this is one thing that I'm really excited to talk to you about is your plans for the next couple of months, you know. A couple of things, from training to diet. Like, I have so many questions to ask you. First of all, what's your training schedule like over the next couple of months? Is it a 7 day a week job?
I'll tell you that, you know, I'm back training, I guess, 2 days now. I like my 2 weeks off, I still run bits and pieces, and but I guess training officially started yesterday, I suppose you could call it. And yesterday was a 12-mile run in the morning, and then I did a 7-mile run that night, and I did a gym session in the afternoon. So
you're making me sweat just listening. Like, your first day back.
Yeah, today's a bit less. Yeah, I always start well, though. Like, I make sure on my break that I don't, like, fall apart. That I need to, like, what some people do is they take 2 weeks off and they do nothing. And then, basically, they've turned 2 weeks into a month, because their next 2 weeks is going to be, like just trying to build it back up. Whereas I try to keep myself in a place that, like, you know, can then handle. When I do start back, I want to be able to start back pretty much, like, full.
And you obviously enjoy it. You obviously enjoy it and love it. And I mean, like, anything that you enjoy and love, like, it's hard to take.
Yeah, that was like,
even if it is your profession, like, it's always going to be tough to do that.
And I ran the day after, but I didn't run the day after Houston for a training effect. I ran because I love running, you know, like,
I
just wanted to go for a little jog. It didn't matter what speed I ran. If I wanted to walk uphill,
your little jog is probably a marathon for most of us. Like,
sure. But seriously, like the last 2 weeks, like, I think both Sundays over the last 2 weeks, I still ran 14 or 15 mile, and I just put it down as therapeutic. I don't. It's not like training. It's not. I'm not building fitness. I'm just running. It's just
You're
fun.
Just running, yeah.
Yeah.
So you started yesterday.
Training will build up. Like, that was 19 miles yesterday in gym. That's it. That still is a tough day. Like, don't get me wrong. That's on a Monday. That's as high as it'll get. Tuesday today, I went up to Sports Institute Northern Ireland and did like a treadmill session, I guess you could say. And it's where we can keep a closer eye on heart rate and, you know, hydration while I'm drinking, and they can take lactate, that's called, where they prick my finger and see how much waste product I'm producing in my body, which can roughly tell you how tired you are, type thing. And we did that. Well, was probably about 14 mile this morning. And that's all I'll do today. Now, tomorrow now, I'll be a couple of runs, could be two sort of 6 or 7 mile runs. The week itself will end up being about 105 to 110 mile a week, hopefully. And one thing I will say is, you know, in the past it had been 90 to 95, but one of the things that's became quite, first of all, in Boston Marathon, I'm the slowest in the field. So I think there's an elite field of about 18, and I'm at the bottom of it. So I think in the past, I used to be able to train a little bit less and, like, I guess justify that that's okay because I'm still progressing. Whereas now it's kind of got to the point where if I know that somebody else does an hour run in the morning and then an hour run that night, or they do 3 hours on a Sunday, and I know that in 3 months' time, I'm going to have to race them, what does it say about me if I'm not trying to do, I guess, as much as them?
The same, if not, you know, more.
It's like if you were trying to compete with your friend and you were both saving up money, and whoever had the most at the end of that 4 month period, and you knew he was saving 2,000 a week and you were only saving one, well, what do you think? You know, how do you think?
It's a great way of putting it, actually.
And yes, like, of course, there's a responsibility, like I talked about, to stay healthy and stay injury free and things like this, but you can do runs on an Alter G, you know, instead of doing a 1 hour run at night, you can get on the bike and cycle for an hour.
Okay, yeah. And like, we're in a day and age now, Stephen, where everybody is talking about diet and how health,
yeah,
you know, from food is. Can I ask you, do you track your food? Do you have somebody doing it for you? Would you keep an eye on? Not at all?
No, and you know, food would be one thing that like, I really need to nail in over this next, like, whatever this next block. Like, I'll tell you, before Houston, and it sounds terrible, but before Houston, I think it was a month where I pretty much ate out every meal when I was up at altitude and Flagstaff. Now, it didn't mean I was eating bad stuff. It might have been like scrambled eggs and toast and bacon and sausage and all the rest.
But that's to you, because you weren't prepping it yourself. You kind of, you didn't know exactly what was in it.
How it was cooked. You don't know.
Yeah.
And you probably are making like choices where, you know, you're picking something that might just, you know, at home you might have cooked, goodness, I think I cooked myself quinoa, beef and carrots and stuff yesterday, which sounds hideous to me, but it's very healthy. But I mean, if I go to a restaurant, I'm probably not going to pick that.
No, of course not. No, nobody is, really. Like, yeah.
I might just pick mac and cheese and chicken or something.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I totally get where you're coming from. So you don't track at all. And when it comes to, say, you were talking about being a certain weight and how you had to lose weight for the race. So at this day and age, everyone's like, oh, I have to track my calories, I have to track my macros. How does someone like how does someone like you lose that weight then? Is it a case of you just know?
Exercise more than you eat.
That's actually true. A lot of people say that. It's like, up
it's
your exercise.
Look at it.
Yeah, no, it's very simple. Obviously, it proves difficult for people as well. Like, but I was really excited to hear about that, because especially hearing how much weight you had to lose to be race ready, to think that you don't track anything and you're still able to do it just goes to show what you're capable of without weighing your Cocoa Pops in the morning. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I'm pretty good. Like, I just, maybe I have a good metabolism though, so I might not be the best example, but
I could be down to the fact as well, you're running an average of 20 miles a day too. Like, I mean, you're bound
100
to
mile a week.
Well,
I'm sure that burns a few calories.
The odd one or two. Well, to conclude the podcast, we can say you're in a great place. We've got a feeling it's going to be a great year for you. We hope that you have that feeling as well.
Yeah.
Everyone's rooting for you, obviously, of course. And honestly, Stephen, I cannot thank you enough for taking us through that journey of success to kind of, you know, hitting rock bottom and coming back. It really
Absolutely.
Shows people that, like, you can look at even the top athletes like yourself. Everyone has setbacks, you know, and it's nearly normal. And like you said, you know, the bounce back is the hard part, and it's great that you overcame that. It really is. And I'd love to ask you before we let you go, what your three main takeaways would be for our listeners today looking to start or continue their running journey.
Yeah. You know, I did something before Houston that I've never done before. The night before the race, I took a look at myself in the mirror and I, you know, I wanted to tell myself that I was proud of myself. And the first time I did it, speaking out loud, you know, I'm really proud of you, Stephen. I kind of had looked away a little bit. You know, I didn't totally look myself in the eye. And then I made myself do it again. And it was really emotional for me. And I don't think people do that enough. I don't know that people actually know, first of all, what would make them proud of themselves. And then, you know, put in the hard yards to make yourself proud of yourself. It's really simple. It just starts with, my psychologist talks all the time about winning the day. And you know, you don't have to be perfect. You know, we talk about this 80-20, and I talk about 90-10 in the professional world, but you know, just make good decisions. And you know, if running is something that you'd like to get into, we'll have the responsibility to figure out what you can handle first and be patient about it. It'll be worth it in a couple of months' time if you really take your time with it. And then just no excuses. You know, we have so many resources around us now with the internet and you know, whether it's friends or family or, you know, do your research, figure out, you know, how you could do certain races that you want to do, maybe little strengthening exercises if you do pick up an injury and then the last thing would be just to believe in yourself. We live in this super, super, super insecure world now where everyone is just insecure about everything and takes everything really personal.
So true.
And we all do, like, and we live in this filtered world of Instagram filters and people lying about this and the other. So you know, just believe in yourself to at least make a start, and then don't be so hard on yourself if you do six really good days and then one not so good day. Mm-hmm. It's still probably better than the week before. So believe in yourself, you know, make yourself proud And you take your time. Don't burn out too quick.
I mean, even listening to you right now, I'm like, can we finish this podcast so I can get to the gym already? Like, that's how inspired and motivated I am right now, Stephen. Stephen Scullion, honestly, it was an absolute pleasure to talk to you, given everything that you've done.
Yeah.
All we can say now is best of luck with everything in 2020, including Tokyo. We'll be watching. We're rooting for you. Before we let you go, Stephen, where can people find you and where can people learn more about the journey that you're about to undertake in 2020?
I guess a couple of different platforms. You know, I think most people know the general Twitter nowadays and Instagram. You know, I tweet every now and again. You know, I Instagram pictures if I'm off training. And you know, I even did a yoga video one day on Instagram thinking a lot of people got in touch with me and asked about what my yoga routine is. So, and then, of course, the podcast. My own podcast can just be found on Spotify. And you know, I get a lot of really lovely feedback about the podcast. It's very raw and honest, and you know, there's no studio. It's just me with my iPhone and my AirPods. So, but apparently, people have kind of found use out of it, and they're running PBs. And I get like, oh, you're coaching me, but you don't even know it.
Amazing.
There you go. So,
Stephen, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Yeah,
today.
Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Wealthfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. See you next time.